This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Doctor in the House series. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. George, how are we today?
I'm very good. Despite the CMCO, it's quiet out there.
It's very quiet, actually.
I think everyone's very compliant, stay at home. That's a good thing.
But you know what? Come out once in a while, go and have dinner. You know, four people can sit on a table now. The restaurants need some kind of business, but, you know, follow the SOPs. Come and, you know, support the poor fellas.
But
they need it.
Be safe as well, of course.
You know,
wash your hands and all the sanitizer and everything. You know, before this was announced last week, I was so looking forward to having Prof. Vicky on the show because, you know, he's got the best toys in town. And then, but when this happened, my heart was so broken.
Why?
Because we don't get to see the toys.
I know, right? And this guy, you got to specify what toy, George.
Right, okay, because
on your
toys are not mentionable, right?
No,
okay. No, not that sort of toy. These are the real brain, not the other brain.
Know, toys aside, you know, you're going to be vegetarian for 9 days, are you, from tomorrow?
From tomorrow,
yeah.
That's right.
I mean, the Hindus celebrate something called Navratri, which is starting tomorrow for 9 days, and so do the Chinese.
That's right, well. The Taoism, we've got this nine emperors god festivals, which starts tomorrow. And it's like, you know, I made a promise about when I was at 14 years old and during SRP, and then, you know, have to get all those A's to get to good school. Now it's payback time. 52 years later, you're still paying back. But it's good. You know, you lose weight.
Why do you do it now?
Why do I do it now?
To lose weight.
Yeah, well, to keep healthy. Detox, right? You know, whatever it is.
You don't
detox.
Have to wait till...
there's still more rooms to improve. And then also the other things that the Thai do that a lot. It's like, you know, if you go to northern part of Malaysia, in Penang, Kota Bharu, Phuket, Bangkok, everyone's doing it. It's good for you.
At this time of the year?
Yeah,
the
that's
nine
right.
Emperor God thing.
It starts exactly tomorrow.
Okay.
First day of the ninth lunar month.
Right. I'll think about
it. We digressed, didn't we?
We did. I'll think about doing this whole Navratri thing. I'll ask Prof. Vic as well. Well, welcome to the show, Professor Dr. Vic Naiswaran, Mother Naiswaran, Division of the Neurosurgery Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. How are you today? Are you going to be vegetarian for 9 days?
Silly. Are you dumb?
Well, oh, try it. You like
no,
it.
I shouldn't be saying this on live air, but, you know, I don't think we are designed to be herbivore.
Uh-huh.
We lack the necessary enzymes and the anatomical makeup to eat grass. So that's what I tell everybody. So I'm going against my religion if I didn't eat meat.
Actually, you probably just started a, you know, bombardment of all the listeners out there who are vegetarian. You know, you're going to get all the hate mail soon.
What nonsense? Look at your teeth, for goodness sake.
That's
It wasn't meant to tear a deer apart, but anyway. Okay, so we have Prof. Vic on the line today because your team, Prof. Vic, at University of Malaya, you worked on something very interesting during the MCO period where it was difficult to actually do ward rounds in the neurosurgery department. And that's your specialty, isn't it? You are a neurosurgeon, am I correct?
Yes, you are.
Who specializes especially
the real brain
in,
compared to urology. This is neurology and urology. The confusion always gets
George.
That's right.
He's like completely, don't confuse us now. but you also specifically look at the base of neck.
Base
of skull. Thank you very much. You know, and this guy is like so specialized. You know, how many
he's
people?
He's a brain surgeon. What are you talking about here?
Base of neck. Okay, base of skull. Yeah. What is that, Profik?
Basically, I take out tumors at the bottom bit of the brain as the nerves and all that interface with the skull, where access is a little bit more difficult to get at. So that's what I do.
Okay. So specialized. Is there anyone else in the country who does it?
There are a couple of people who do it, I think.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about...
I've learned never to say I'm the only one.
Right. Come on, Prof. Vic.
Prof. Vic and I, we worked together about 13 years ago now, Vicky?
Yeah, probably.
And it's like, during that time, he already started all these kind of like a... You know, if urologists claim that they have a lot of toys to play with, all these laser-breaking stones and prostates and robots, that brain surgeons truly have a lot more toys to play with.
Really?
Because those days, he came up with this idea. Was that true that you came up with the idea idea of WhatsApping all these images. Let's say, you know, in Guamusan, there is a head injury, and then that image can actually be transferred to the handphones in the tertiary center, and it can make decisions on how to manage them, as I recalled.
I'm surprised you remember that.
Of course.
Yeah. We actually did the first paper that validated transmitting images using an SMS. And then later on, we repeated that with MMS. And we validated that in an emergency situation, you could actually transfer these images and you could make sufficient, a good diagnosis for in an emergency situation. And it was good enough to decide whether we transfer a patient or not. And we published both of them in reputable journals, one in Journal of Trauma and one in British Journal of Neurosurgery. And that was, in 2007. And I always say that's before the time of iPhones and WhatsApp. Yeah.
Do you still use that facility?
We absolutely, but these days we use the WhatsApp to transfer our images.
Okay. All right, that's interesting. So let's talk about these smart glasses that you actually use during the MCO period to carry out ward rounds, because it's a little bit more complicated for neurosurgery. You want to share with us what you did via those smart glasses?
So actually, when at the height of COVID, during the first run, in March and April, as part of the, as being medical director of the private wing, I sat also in the University Hospital Task Force, COVID Task Force, under Prof. Adiba. And one of the things that became very apparent at some point was that the doctors were used to sending large entourage of doctors and nurses into ICUs to see patients. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, COVID put a stop to that.
Yeah.
We couldn't expose people. PPEs were expensive. And we were sending one or two people only into the ICU.
But the large entourage is because you're a teaching hospital, isn't it?
No, it happens even in not just in teaching hospitals. In many hospitals, it happens like that. Other than maybe private hospitals. So all these people were going in. And then there were other times when patients were being monitored and we had to mount cameras and things like that. And this was about the same time we were working on some other telemedicine project, which we had started in January before the shutdown. And so someone had approached us with these smart glasses and we were wondering how we could incorporate it. And all of a sudden in April, it presented with the opportunity. And suddenly this thing had a reason to exist. So, Google Glass, I think, and a few others tried to get this into medicine, and I don't think it really caught on. So what we did was we managed to secure one of these glasses with a little bit of difficulty because postage and all that was difficult at that point.
This is from America, isn't it?
From America, yeah. And also we managed to get our own software team to develop a software that could be used. Because otherwise we were going to route it through different countries and all that, and patient confidentiality and security would not allow that. So we developed something that we could reside in Malaysia within the hospital. And so and because I'm a neurosurgeon, I have access to the neurosurgical ICU as opposed to the general ICU and all those places. So we decided to run this over 10 ward rounds with 100 different patients. So we parked a consultant neurosurgeon in a coffee room, and we sent a junior doctor to do the ward rounds.
With
the smart glasses on. And the other consultant, there were two of them actually at different times. So they either were using their handphones or an iPad or something of that sort to do it. So the interesting thing was one of the consultants started off by sitting in the coffee room and doing it, and after 3 days decided to do it from his car, and on the fourth day, I think he did it from home.
Right.
Well, I can imagine that in the future, you're just going to get the most junior person to wear the glasses and then PPE it up, and then just, this robot person is just being sent to the ward.
Okay, I'm curious. I'm just still trying to imagine this, right? Okay, so you have a junior doctor walking around with the smart glasses. What is being fed back to the consultant who's sitting in the coffee room?
So, essentially, I developed this new phrase over the last 1 week, which I say that I make a humanoid out of the guy who's wearing. It doesn't have to be a junior doctor, okay? Of the person who's wearing goggles. So the moment he or she wears his goggles, I essentially reside in their brain, and they can hear me in their ear. And I can see exactly what it is that they are seeing. So I can tell them, I can give instructions to them and say, okay, I want the patient to do this, I want the patient to do that. And then I can see exactly what they are doing, and I don't have to wait for somebody else to interpret what they are doing via a phone line to me. I can also make them walk up to monitoring devices, and I can see firsthand with my own eyes, albeit through their glasses, I can see exactly what the physiological monitor might be saying. What's the BP? What's the pulse? What's the temperature? I can look at other documentation if I want to. And then I can tell them, okay, this is when the humanoid part starts. I can tell them, look, I want to look at a certain screen, and they will get that screen up for me. Or I want to see this particular thing, and then they will get this particular thing. And I'll say, I want to see the image, and they can do that for me. So these are things that I can do and I can see. Now, we tested in the neuro ICU, not because we are COVID patients there, but because it just allowed us to do it. And we didn't want to send them out inside with the PPE and everything. But later we did show that you can use it with the PPE and all that kind of things. So we actually just proved the concept. There are at the same point many other teams in the world who are also trying to do it, but we may just have beat them slightly to the gun by having done it and validated that you can use it. And while it's used, so now there are certain other departments in the hospital who are using this. The infectious disease now has actually done it with a couple of patients, with the patients who potentially have COVID, to do their ward rounds with full PPE. They've done it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So it's now extending into real world use. I've also used it with teaching medical students, right? We used to teach 15 students at a go on a ward round for 1 hour. So now the rule says that I'm only allowed to take 4 students with me. So I've got 2 options. I either do the entire teaching round in a classroom, which defeats the purpose of a clinical teaching round, or I do 4 ward rounds with 4 students each time and take 4 hours of my time. And that's not going to happen, right? So what we have done is we have tried it in a classroom where, okay, we do the certain presentations in the classroom, and then I'll take 4 of the kids to the ward with me. I'm wearing the glasses this time. And the students in the seminar room are able to see exactly what the other students are doing. So as the student, if I'm asking the student, say, for example, to palpate the stomach, I would be watching the student with my viewfinder. And the students in the ward can actually see what the student is doing. And as I have a conversation with that student and ask them questions like we do in teaching rounds, the students in the room can hear what the kids are saying. And then if I want to shock and awe the students in the seminar room, then I can call the name out and suddenly they will all suddenly become very surprised. Because I can see them at a small picture in the corner of my eyes and I can say, you know, George, tell me, what's the brain connected to?
Right. So did during the MCO, how did it help? What was the biggest relief with these glasses for the neurosurgery department?
To be very honest, we didn't exactly use it. We tested it during the MCO.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So only now at this time, when the second round is coming, the infectious disease is using it as part of their ward round.
Right. Okay.
Starting to do it.
Yeah. Vicky, I correct me if I was wrong. I saw some footage, you know, during the MCO and on a daily basis, we get all these footage that's sent to you on your WhatsApp. Apparently in Singapore, they are having these kind of robots in the streets that people will just measure temperature. And also in NUS, apparently they have these robots that actual robot rather than, a human with the glasses that can go into infectious ward and basically downloaded all the parameters and all the information. How much different would that sort of scenario be compared to the glasses?
Okay. Tongue-in-cheek, labor is cheap in Malaysia.
Yeah.
a robot costs a lot of money.
Right.
A pair of goggles with software doesn't cost anywhere near as much as a robot. I can actually make my humanoid do exactly what I want it to do. The robot will probably have a set algorithm over which it'll follow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can ask my doctor who is in the room to do certain things that the robot may not be able to do.
Of course, examination and then also palpating the patients on all the things is a human touch that the robot can actually deliver.
And moreover, if I was a patient, it's already bad enough to see a doctor coming in hooded and gowned and everything. Can you imagine a robot that comes in, right, with absolutely minimal human feature? I'm already scared being there with potentially having COVID or anything else, something else. And there's a robot dealing with it. I mean, it's nothing like dealing with a human being. So here I actually have a real human being who can act and interact as a human would. At the same time, this person has the advisement or has the supervision of someone else sitting there and watching what the person is doing. So the scope for this is not just during the COVID. The scope for it is going to be much more than COVID. One of the areas we see potential use is, say, in an ICU. Not all ICUs are like a big hospital where they have large numbers of doctors on duty at night. So many ICUs are run by just nursing staff or even a junior doctor. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, when something goes wrong, some alarms are starting to buzz and you want to contact your boss, your anesthetist, or your intensivist, you're calling them up and it's very difficult to make the decision. It just goes back to the old days when before the MMS and SMS thing we did, my juniors will call me up at 3 o'clock in the morning and describe a scan, what they see in a picture to me. It's bad enough trying to visualize it at 5 o'clock in the evening. What about at 3 o'clock in the morning, just as they wake you up and they're trying to describe this thing? So picture paints 1,000 words, right?
Yeah.
So now whoever's in there in front looking at the patient, I'm seeing it together with the person. And by being a bit more senior, I'm also able to give a senior input straight away. Yeah?
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so we're discussing smart glasses. And speaking of which also, you know, just yesterday, I think two auxiliary police personnel who wore state-of-the-art helmets equipped with thermal scanners were on board KTM commuter trains.
Right.
I mean, it just reminds me very much of that. And passengers were really quite taken up by taking photos and all of that. What more if somebody comes with a PPE, full PPE, with smart glasses? I'm not sure how would I take that. Yeah,
well,
I know.
Mira has this nightmare vision of all the doctors will be sitting at home now and then just send the most junior person and then go to do ward round.
Damn round. I'm telling you, George, you read my mind.
That's
I was going
right.
to come back to that. Yes. Then we pay you for what?
That's right.
You know, okay, we'll come back and find out more after the break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me, together with, via Zoom, joining us, Professor Dr. Vigneswaran Madhaneswaran. He's a division of, from the Division of Neurosurgery, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. We're discussing smart glasses because Prof. Vic's team actually experimented a little with smart glasses during the MCO period. You know, I wanted to ask you, Prof. Vic, I mean, how do you then measure the efficacy and safety of the patient care which is delivered with these glasses? How do we know, whether or not it's real?
So what we did was, when we did this cohort of 100 patients over 10 ward rounds, so the guys who were doing the ward rounds first did it with the goggles, and then they repeated the entire ward round now in a conventional fashion. And then an assessment was made of what their decision-making process would have been. Was there a major change or not? And we were unable to demonstrate any significant change in how they managed the patient. Of course, the study was just done over 10 ward rounds and 100 patients. This may differ if you use in larger numbers. So we have extended the use into various areas. So we have identified at least some areas which definitely will benefit from this. It is actually quite easy because the technology with the glasses is pretty good. The images that we get is actually quite clear. It's just a case of I see it and I can believe what I'm seeing. Yeah. So that's not the problem. So there are certain areas in a hospital or certain tasks that we do, it will definitely work. In some other tasks, it definitely won't work.
Such as?
For example, we tested it at in theaters when you do an operation. Can a senior observe a junior do an operation? So in the case of an open surgery, it was possible to view it, not the greatest, but it was okay, better than doing not as good as doing a ward round. But if you were doing an endoscopic procedure or a microscope procedure, then it doesn't work.
Because you're looking at a computer screen.
Yeah, a screen, and it's very difficult, okay? It also requires a certain degree of training for the person who's using the glasses. on how to use it and how to walk around. Because it is, in the initial, when the first time you wear it, the inclination is to watch everything through the small eyepiece that you have. And what happens is within about 15 minutes, the person becomes completely seasick and disorientated.
Oh, dear. Mm-hmm.
So they need to be, they need to switch off that little lens, the lens there, they just have to ignore it and just look ahead as they would normally. Only if I wanted to show you something specific, then I would look through it through the viewfinder. So otherwise, you lose any sensory perception that you're going to get. And next thing you know, you may be throwing up.
Oh, okay. So it's basically what you see, visual, and what you hear.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't, it can't connect to what you're thinking, can
Correct,
it?
Correct, yeah.
No, it can't.
No,
connect.
That is where the person sits in your head and thinks for you.
Not yet, not yet. Right, okay.
No, then every thought will be transmitted.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
All your dirty thoughts in the urology ward round will be really transmitted.
George,
then that will be really bad.
I mean, do you see application for smart glasses in your work?
Okay, right. Amira, I mean, to be honest with you, I think digitalizations in medicine is inevitable. And this is one of the small steps that contributes towards that big picture towards the end. I think what COVID has done is essentially fast tracks everything. In a way, when Vicky mentioned about this particular kind of information transmission, I began to imagine that already it is some sort of things like that is already happening. In fact, in my sort of primitive way, it's happening in a way that patient, you know, the nurses will call me up and say there's some blood in the urine after the operations. And then I will just say, go there and then use your WhatsApp and then do a video call for me and then show me what's happening.
I don't think
and
you should be telling the world this.
Well, of course, because I want to know for sure whether this is happening or not. In a small primitive manner, I'm not using a Google glasses, but the thing is that my WhatsApp FaceTime thing is already doing a primitive way. However, what I think the real application is going to be the smart glasses being smarter. Because at the end of the day, if the smart glasses, which we already have the technology that can incorporate all the parameters. For example, Vicky was mentioning that, you know, the blood pressure, the pulse rate, the oxygen saturations, if all those data can be instantly incorporated into glasses and then subsequently stored, what will happen is that smarter glasses will have the big data of the patients and also whatever is used in the applications for either research or future uses in order to understanding patients' behavior, you know, physiology. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, Vicky, essentially, at the end of the day, what will change the landscape of medicine is that algorithm and artificial intelligence in a way. So if the glasses itself can accumulate useful information and can process it, do you not think that essentially that will be a kind of like a future scenario or what's going to happen to those data that you can accumulate, potentially accumulate with the glasses?
So you are absolutely right. So what you did with your mobile device, getting a nurse to show you the picture, is pretty much what we had done, but with a lot greater ease,
mm-hmm.
a lot more ease. Yeah. So now, if the nurse was wearing the goggles, she can see it for herself. She see it, and you can see it through her eyes, what it is. So not only will you see the color of the blood, you'll also see the sedimentation
mm-hmm.
present. You could even talk to the patient through your nurse and ask how he was feeling. And if the patient is bleeding quite a bit, you can also get her to look at the physiological monitor and immediately know what the blood pressure, pulse, and everything's doing.
With a bit of seasick.
Yeah. Well, that bits won't be seasick because you're only looking at specific things. But if all this can be then linked up, and which is what the smart glasses are doing. So the smart glasses is not just a case of you looking and me giving you a reply. So the conversation that you and your nurse will be having, and hopefully it's all professional, will be stored. Right? So the conversation that you have had together with what you have asked her to see will be stored. So that can be analyzed later. That can be securitized, you know, and later for references can be pulled up. So those things can be done already. And if the glasses, that's one of the projects we're working on. If the glasses can be connected to another device which can bring in other bits of information, then all of it is stored over a period of time or brought back later for analysis.
If these smart glasses have existed, why have we waited so long to even try it out, Prof Vic?
So like George said, COVID has changed the world on its head, right? It's completely a different, a lot of technology that existed that we were reluctant to use, we are now using. Somewhere I was reading, you know, everybody was very concerned about personal data, right? Come COVID, and we are quite happy to give our phone numbers to anybody, right? And our name, our phone numbers, all kinds of details, and nobody's asking any question on how the thing is being stored and what.
Because somebody told me this, right? You know, the doctors have reached a day when the security guards actually take your temperature instead, which is happening now, right?
Yeah. So. It has changed a lot of things, yeah? It's changed a lot of things. So COVID has accelerated many things.
Do you see yourself taking this one step further, as in starting to invest in it and do it, use it more in your practice?
Absolutely.
What's stopping you?
Well, we are in... Since the paper came out and it then got carried on by Malay Mail and all that, a few interested parties have contacted us to see how we can roll it out to other areas of medicine, because the use case becomes very obvious now that we have demonstrated it. The use was always there, you know. And I always joked when we did the handphone transfer of devices, George, people were transferring porn by phone all the time.
I don't know what you're talking about. Why are you all revealing all of this to the whole world?
it's only between three of us. That's all.
Yeah, that's right. So, but the clarity was good enough that you can get your nurse now to look at the urine color, and I get my doctors and nursing staff to send me images of patient scans all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Just off-shelf technology that we are using. Make it easy.
Okay. Vicky, did you actually have any responses from the patients? I mean, obviously, this is one-sided that we're looking at its efficacy and also the acceptance between the person who is wearing the glasses and also looking at the efficacy of how you interpret that information. And what about on the receiving end of the patients as the... obviously... Some of your patients are in neuro ICUs and obviously too ill to respond. However, can you see any challenges you may face when this is
on the patient side? Yeah, we'll come back. I want to find out a little bit more, and I want everyone to chime in as to how you would feel as a patient if this
doctors is not. There's no longer that big ward round coming to see you.
No. It's just the fact that the real doctor is not there. I mean, you know,
the real doctor is in there in spirit.
I can wear these glasses and do ward rounds now, and you know, one of you can just see through what I'm seeing, right? So that's one. But before we come back, and you know what, if you have feedback, please share your thoughts at 018-789-8899. It's a WhatsApp, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. But what if there's miscommunication between the person wearing the glasses and you as the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
So, I answer now?
Yes.
So, let me take the last question first. What the glasses actually does is it gets rid of the miscommunication. Right? When we were transferring images by phone, it was only one bit of information. Right? When we went from SMS, which is a single digit, single information, to an MMS, we had a whole scan that could be transmitted. We moved a huge step forward. Now, I can see the patient, and I can talk to the doctor at the same time. So a whole load of miscommunication has just completely gone out of the window. I could potentially also have a conversation with the patient because I can hear the patient's voice as the other doctor speaks to the patient.
And how, when you speak, how will the patient hear you?
The patient can't hear my voice. When I speak to the... So if you are wearing the glasses and I'm speaking to you, you can ask my question to George. But when George replies, I can hear his voice and your voice.
I'm just thinking now, this looks like a possessed person standing in front of me. Okay, we're going to come back and find out more up next. If you have thoughts, please share it with us. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. What do you think? Do smart glasses? Do you think it'll work for you as a patient? Please tell me. I have a million concerns just listening to this. That's coming up next after the market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, together with me on our Health and Living segment. Joining us on the line today, Professor Dr. Vigneswaran Madaneswaran. He's from the Division of Neurosurgery, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. We're discussing smart glasses. Now, Prof. Vic and his team did some kind of an experiment where, you know, you tried out smart glasses during COVID in the neuro wards. You were explaining to us how this actually works. Essentially, it means someone wearing these smart glasses and doing ward rounds. You as the specialist perhaps sits in the coffee room. You could be even at home. And everything that this person who's wearing the smart glasses sees and hears, you see and you hear on your end. I'm just simplifying this entire, what this technology really is. So I think the concern and what I put out is, would you be concerned at all as a patient if this happened? Because you're either going to have a resident doctor or a nurse or someone wear these glasses and come and see you. Your specialist is not going to be with you. And now when I ask you, how will you communicate with the patient? You say you speak through this person. And, you know, I'm already imagining I've done neurosurgery and I'm hearing voices. Goodness me, that probably make me more ill. Come on, guys. I mean, how did the patients take to this? Did you get feedback from them? Sorry, Prof. Vic, hold on. Can you? Okay, you're muted. Okay, go ahead.
I would not use these glasses to deal with a fully conscious normal patient. I won't use this in a clinic environment. I won't. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use this on ward rounds, for example. For emergencies, for evening when the doctor is usually never around anyway, right? Where at periods in which the doctor is not around, is already at home and something happens and they want to communicate. So in fact, it is better for the patient that the doctor is actually there virtually. Okay, so that's one of the areas. Or for example, this could be worn by first responders in a site of a disaster or an accident. Mm-hmm. That's another area this can be used at. It can be used from seniors to supervise juniors doing simpler procedures and stuff like that. So the use will be restricted. It should be restricted. But of course, human beings being human beings, we will extend it all over the place. But I think it would be inappropriate to, say, do a ward round, a normal clinic consultation. But having said that, sometimes if you're going to take a long distance referral or if someone wants to send a patient to you from somewhere else and you want to have a discussion first before you move the patient, this can be used. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't be there. So, yeah.
I also agree. I think the application...
There is a bit of a...
echo.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I think the applications, like you said, you know, when there is a distant patients, for example, in the rural part of Kelantan or somewhere, and I think that would be incredibly useful. Or the paramedics, for example, attending any emergency. And I really think that to apply this in COVID ward to reduce the number of people getting in and out of the environment will be incredibly useful as well. And then all the specialists will be watching and actually pay close attention outside. I mean, Provik, obviously, this is some potential. I mean, at the moment, we are having our third wave of the COVID at the moment. And of course, we know that UMMC itself, it's playing a vital role in treating patients in that sort of scenario. Is that affecting the neurosurgical ICU at the moment? And also, if it is in the future, do you think that this will be exactly the device that will be applicable for the COVID patients in ICU?
They are trying to use it at the moment for COVID patients in the main ICU. The COVID ward itself. But we haven't got that many patients here. Mm-hmm. Right. So we are using it for that. And they are testing out the efficacy. Mm-hmm. We are not using it in the ICU routinely yet. But I know my colleagues in general ICU would be wanting to try this shortly. In the future, I would see this being used in my ICU for a standard evening ward round where all the seniors are not around. At night, when they do their 8 o'clock rounds, where the more junior doctors are doing their rounds, they would potentially be doing the ward rounds now with one of these. Mm-hmm. And the junior and the senior can, as he has his dinner, he can watch what's going on for entertainment, right? And can have an advisement. Now, here, the patient's actually benefiting because under normal, under current circumstances, they would have been just seen by someone more junior. So a senior can continue to follow the ward rounds even when they're at home.
And intern Sabrina has tweeted, texted in to say telemedicine is the way forward, especially in COVID-19 and patients and doctors, she says, will just have to get used to
it.
We will have no choice but to adjust or no. It always takes some time. But what about junior doctors? Will they eventually lose that, you know, ability to touch and see and feel and... that's basic. I mean, you as doctors would attest to that, that you need to go through all of that before you actually build that experience. Will junior doctors lose out on that?
No, they won't, for a couple of reasons. Number one, as I said, I don't see this being used everywhere uniformly. So in the general wards, general things, you know, they can still do all these things. Anyway, you're depending on the junior doctors to go into the front line first. Like all good generals will sit at the back and watch and listen to them.
How nice. Gosh, I just love it that you've admitted it.
Yes.
Look at the both of you doing shows.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Actually, Mira, I mean, the listeners just tweeted in or texted in, obviously came up with a very good point. Digitalizations in medicine is inevitable. What's your future vision of us practicing medicine with the help of technology, apart from the glasses? I mean, Vic, you're always very up to date with technology and devices. Where do you see us in 5-10 years time when it comes to consultations in the clinic and telemedicine operations and utilizing technology and 5G and lots of things? What's your view on that?
Are we embracing it fast enough?
I think the younger generation will force it to be embraced. Again, another thing that COVID has changed is the fact that people are suddenly willing to do telemedicine. People are finding it good. We are delivering drugs by mail, which previously would have been difficult. Other technology that's used, I mean, EMR and electronic medical record system and all that, you know, is here to stay. The next step will be to cull the data that's within, to collect the data that's within this and be able to use it better. That's going to happen. Technology like the smart glasses will be also used in training of doctors. We trained in the era of see one, do one, teach one, yeah? And in some hospitals in the West, for example, they will have a senior, a consultant must be in theater, irrespective of what time of the day, so a junior is operating. Now, most of the times, if a senior is going to be there, he's going to finish the operation at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. He's not going to sit down and have, you know, in the waiting room. But in this way, it forms, I think, a method of a bridge in your training process. So there's a point where you are trained with direct supervision. And before you can fly solo, you can continue to be supervised in an indirect fashion.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of data, a whole big thing about technology is going to be big data. All this data that is being generated will be collected by somebody cleverer and will be processed, and we will develop things that we can, we can't do, or we should do. Right. Today, my students, in the old days, we used to memorize things, George, right? Mm-hmm. And today, if you turn your head around slightly, somebody's already Googling a question that you asked them. Right. So how we get information, how we store information, how we use information is also changing. So medicine will change. I mean, a lot of things will remain, but a lot of things will also change. Robots are being introduced all the time. Your field has got huge amounts
George, you have.
That's right.
Da Vinci to work with.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, eventually this is what... it will allow the telemedicine and also to operate and then to utilize the expertise from worldwide so that operation can be carried out remotely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also in the future, you have drones probably getting involved as well. Maybe one day, instead of having the medical students or the most junior doctor going into the ICU, you have the drone wearing the glasses that Vicky invented and then going into ICU to take all this data.
But I think there's one thing that since we were talking about robots, one thing we have to be concerned about would be, I suppose, that we have to make sure the standards of our doctors, our surgeons, are top-notch. Because what's going to happen with 5G and 6G and 7G as they come along is there's a danger that these operations, we become where we set up the operations as surgeons, and somebody from the US or from the UK might decide to operate on our patient. And you know how patients can be selective and all that. So it's always someone overseas must be better than someone local. And the danger, I suspect, will be that if we don't keep our standards up, our jobs, we may be pushed down the pecking order. Maybe I sound like Dr. Doom and Gloom, but you know, that's something real that we have to be concerned about. Our primary job could be outsourced.
So somebody here performs surgery through the instructions of someone from abroad. Is that what you're saying?
No, from abroad take control of the machine and do the operation.
You can imagine for radical prostatectomy, yep, and then the robot, the patient is in Malaysia, the robot is set up with the standard ports and everything in place. The actual operator is 10,000 miles away, yep, and then an expert from Mayo actually operating on the patients here. What Vicky is suggesting that if we are not up to date and complacent, and then not really keeping our skills up to date, then we'll end up just being technicians setting up the patients here, and then other surgeons will be operating from abroad.
How interesting, isn't it? Prof Vic, would you have a message for us on telemedicine and the way forward?
Oh. This is just going to expand from here, and we are going to see changes in how things are going to get done. And I suspect I'm always an optimist, but I think this use of these goggles, I'm quite excited. I think it's going to make a big impact. It's going to change how junior doctors are supervised, how patients are being looked after hours, and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. George?
Well, Vicky, it always takes a brain surgeon to be innovative, right? And this is truly, truly what it takes, a brain surgeon to come up with that.
I mean, you're something else, Prof Vic. I mean, I love how you experiment and have so much interest in this.
Yeah, I mean, after knowing Vicky for at least 13 years and 7 years, constantly not wasting any time. Obviously, MCO, we look back and most of us just cooking at home and then get ourselves fat. And then Vicky is just working out to save the world. One thing that I would like you to do, I think it will be a good idea if this is really kind of like a formulated and designed specifically for the use of medicine, because obviously at the moment the Google Glasses is itself for general use. However, if it can actually help to zoom into the areas that is of interest in medicine, perhaps finally, doctors can take charge and then set up some patent and then actually, use it as a Malaysian device that actually can potentially save the world or change the way that medicine is practiced.
I have a problem with that. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. I mean, Prof Vic, what do you think?
I don't think we'll be inventing anything, but at least I think we have the opportunity to extend its use in various areas of clinical use. And be the masters at it and tell the world how it's used. the goggles themselves have been invented, have been used. Software is software. People will probably invent it in other parts of the world and, different versions of it. Yeah. But the actual utilization, how it is going to be used, I think we should embrace it and we should show that, it can be used here, there and everywhere. Yeah.
Indeed. We look forward to the more data from you.
Yeah, I'm watching you, George. embrace. Thank you both very much for joining me today. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Professor Dr. Vigneswaran Madaneswaran from the Division of Neurosurgery, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, speaking to us about virtual medicine via smart glasses on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.